You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Martinelli. Great to see you after work. And isn't it wonderful that it looks like we're getting our first day of fall? The temperature's dropped about 15 degrees. We're out on the screen porch, got the crickets in the background. And I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's been quite a while since we've been able to be out here. It was pretty warm this summer. So, yeah, it's really nice to have the evening cool down enough that we can sit out in our favorite screen room.
But you know what? Yesterday, what I really enjoyed, and we haven't done this enough because we've been working so hard, but we actually got to go down to the river and sit in a couple of feet of water with our lawn chairs and a glass of wine and some crackers and some cheese. And we just watched the sun go down, and I got to tell you, there's nothing like living in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do, and not another soul around but you and I sitting in the river and just being able to, you know, have a conversation just like this, which we do every day.
Well, that's exactly right. So, boy, I'll tell you what, it's all over the media, the whole impeachment issue, and they're hitting poor President Trump six ways from sideways, it seems.
Well, they are, and it's... You know, there's so much news all day long. I'm really kind of tired of listening to it, and I'm sure most Americans are. I just think it's another fishing expedition. They did this whole impeachment investigation without a vote, and they did it so that they can just have, you know, free rein to subpoena anything and everything, and that's exactly what they're doing. And they are is on a hunt to find anything that they might be able to impeach him for, because what they've got is nothing. And now you have this so-called second whistleblower coming out, and I'm telling you, there, you know, that there was 18 days between when that phone call was and the first whistleblower came out. This is just such a setup. And anybody who can't see that is just, I don't know.
Well, they're just a Kool-Aid drinker.
So blinders on.
Okay, so let's talk about this second so-called whistleblower. Now, this person, the way he's being portrayed, or she, is being portrayed as a first account, right? Not hearsay, first account whistleblower.
Right.
So this person... definitely in on the call where the other person heard it from somebody else, right?
Well, second, that's what they said, but that's actually not what I read.
But you know what? Here's my comment. Who cares? Who cares? We already have the audio tape and the transcript of the telephone call, and there's no there. Are you telling me that the President of the United States cannot call another world leader and ask them to investigate corruption in their country, that where the persons of interest are American citizens, or in America, where persons of interest are from a foreign land? Are you telling me that the President of the United States can't do that, and that people like Joe Biden get a pass just because, coincidentally, he happened to be Vice President of the United States, and now he is a candidate for the presidency? Are you telling me that he gets a bye? It's hands off for him? It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And the other thing is, okay, let's just assume that all this horrible stuff is true. Okay, which, by the way, I got to say, I don't think is horrible anyway. But let's just say that President Trump did do a quid pro quo, which there's no evidence of anywhere.
None at all.
Okay. But let's just say.
Okay.
Okay.
So you're actually coming from a plaintiff standpoint where the courts would have to take into consideration the story that best serves the plaintiff's fact pattern. Is that where you're going, Mrs. Martinelli?
I have no idea where
I'm telling
going.
You that's where you're going. Okay.
Okay. Okay. So then how could you not say that Joe Biden wasn't wrong for doing the same thing? How could one not be wrong and one be wrong. So make up your mind, because you can't have it both ways. Joe Biden freely admits that there was a quid pro quo.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, he's bragged about it. And what are we talking about? Of course, we're talking about the fact that he called up the Ukraine, talked with the prime minister, and said when he was vice president, we're going to withhold our support for you, for your mm-hmm. military. And, you know, of course, we need them to stand in front of the Russians. They're sort of a buffer. And by the way, the tragic thing about the Ukraine is they've lost 15,000 people during this fight with the Russians over the incursion. But anyway, he said, we're going to hold back on all of your on all of our aid to your military unless you fire the lead prosecutor who's prosecuting my son. Which is what's Biden's son's name?
Is it Hunter?
Yeah, I think it's Hunter. Anyway. Hunter Biden for corruption, for right. God's sakes, and he brags about it.
Right. So he actually did, which is set in stone. He actually did the act.
No doubt
that
about
they
it.
Are trying to impeach Trump for. Could you explain that to me? Because I don't understand. So if they are saying, as Joe Biden himself said just a few days ago. Well, they've already investigated. They didn't find anything wrong. Then how could they find anything wrong here? Now, that being said, it's not what President Trump said, and it's not what he did. But yet, they're on a hunt. This almost has nothing to do with what they're saying. It has to do with Ron. It has to do with a needle in a haystack. They're trying to subpoena everything and anything that they can possibly get, you know, the taxes and all the documents and all the previous speeches with or talks with foreign leaders, all those things.
Well, you know, okay, so full disclosure. I don't think it's any secret that Dr. Ron and Linda Martinelli are huge Trump supporters, right? Would you agree? Right, we're huge Trump supporters.
Yes.
But we're also American citizens, and we want our country to move forward. And what is happening, and which has been happening for 2.5 years since President Trump took office in January of 2017, is that America is sluggish in its ability to move forward. Now, Trump is moving us,
and we're in huge ways.
It is, but we could be accomplishing 5 to 10 times more what we're accomplishing right now. And I got to be honest with you, unless you are a total Kool-Aid drinking Democrat, new progressive socialist, Marxist, anarchist, whatever, you have got to admit that we as a country are stymied because of this, and so many more Americans could be moving forward and doing so much better in their lives. And I got to tell you, Linda, I don't think the people care about all of this malarkey. I don't think they care. They want to move forward. They want their kids to move forward. They want to pay lower taxes. They want to remain unemployed. They want to get things for themselves. They want to send their kids to college. Those are the things that matter to the average American that is employed or looking forward to becoming employed, not all of this impeachment crap and all of the the keeping the country from moving forward.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day, but before I say that, I want to say this about what you said. You and I are huge Trump fans. Okay, truth be told, neither you nor I had Trump as our first choice in that election.
And that's exactly right.
But when he became the candidate, we backed him. And I couldn't be happier, to be honest with you. However, I'm not stupid and I'm not blind. And neither are you. So we're not Trump Kool-Aid drinkers in the way that if he did something really wrong, we would be upset about it. There would have to be justice. But in every single thing that they've come up with, there is nothing, and they lie about it all the time.
And you know, and you're exactly right. We are huge Trump supporters, but we're not Kool-Aid drinkers whatsoever. And you and I have had a number of coffee conversations where we called the president out. Man, that was a bonehead thing to do. What were you thinking? That, you know, that kind of stuff. And you know, I wish somebody would, you know, sometimes flush his BlackBerry down the toilet, you know, all these ridiculous Twitter feeds and things like that. But that's just the way this guy is, and you're not going to change him. However, all of the meaningful things that this president does are remarkable. And the thing that I like about him, and I know you like about him, and I know other common sense conservatives like us, and even some moderates and libertarians that we've spoken with, they like the fact that he's a fighter for the United States of America.
Yes.
And it's America first, and he is, you know, absolutely not a globalist.
Yes.
Okay? He can't stand that.
And it's about time. And despite everything that they do to him to stop him in his tracks, he continues to proceed forward. And I just really admire that. I mean, I'm disgusted with people like Mitt Romney,
and Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi. I mean, go name anybody that you want trying to take this president down. Now, you know, going back to full disclosure, and a few years ago and a couple of elections ago, you and I were supporters of Mitt Romney.
Yes.
Okay? And I think we voted for Mitt Romney,
yes.
Did we not?
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you what a turncoat traitor to the United States of America. Okay, I know you're kind of like rolling your eyes, but I'm telling you what, the guy showed his true colors. He's like John McCain. He's a narcissist, and he's vindictive. And you know, Trump helped him to get elected. When,
yes,
you know,
yes, he did.
And I know
he backed him,
and he thought the better about it, but he did it because it was the right thing to do,
yes,
to get a Republican in the Senate. And Mitt Romney turned around and stabbed him
in
the back.
He absolutely does. I would never vote for Mitt Romney for anything.
Oh, not again.
And
ever.
I never thought I would say that, but I absolutely will never ever trust him again. But anyway, I you know, back to the impeachment thing here,
sure,
is just I truly believe that they have set this up, and I mean, there's just no doubt in my mind that they've set this up to happen, that Schiff knew about this, that they planned it the way that it is because they want to take your vote away. So they know, Ron, that the country is for President Trump. They don't see that they're going to win. So the only way that they can win is by getting Trump eliminated from being possibly elected.
Yes. And you know what we talked about just a few days ago? And that is, this is the bloodless coup.
Yes.
This is the constant pressure to effect a bloodless coup in the United States. And just like you said, Linda, to, you know, to take our votes away. Now, you know, let me backtrack for a second just to make sure that you and I are clear on my comments about Mitt Romney. I didn't say he's a traitor to the United States. I said he's a traitor. What I meant was, he's a traitor to the Republican Party, and he's a traitor to this president by stabbing him in the back. The president did him a huge favor, and he's never forgotten Trump during the election, basically taking him down and getting rid of him as a candidate. But you know what? That's the job of these candidates.
Well, no, the guy who got rid of Romney as a candidate was Obama. And it actually was Romney himself, because he was way too weak at
yes.
that time. And he should have had that election by far.
That's exactly right.
And he didn't. He would not bring the gloves out and fight against Obama. And therefore, we had to put up with four more years of a guy who really had a devastating effect on this country in so many ways, economically.
I'll never forget him for what he did to law enforcement.
Politically, around the globe, to law enforcement, to racial relations in this country. He was devastating for this country, the worst president in my lifetime. And that's hard to say, because Jimmy Carter was pretty bad,
too. Well, you know what? And we've switched gears a little bit, and we're talking about former President Obama. But I'm right with you there. And the thing that really bothered me about one of many things, but the thing that seriously bothered me about Obama, is this was our first black president. Even conservatives had high hopes. Once he got elected, we had high hopes that this man would move this country forward, and he took back racial relations and also law enforcement relations with the community. He took us back 60 years.
Well, not only that, but I actually hold him responsible for the number of officers' deaths.
Oh, me too.
That we have now.
Me too.
So, you know, just to continue on with Obama for a minute, because I probably never have had the chance to rant as much as I would like, because I'm a typical conservative. I'm too polite to say a lot of the things that I think, although you wouldn't think so. But really, I mean, I definitely think that he took America backwards in so many ways, and it's going to take us a long time to recover.
And you know, I don't think we'll ever recover in the law enforcement side, to be honest with you. I mean, I hate to be a pessimist, but not from what I'm seeing in the United States.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, Obama criticized America to other countries all the time. He criticized Christianity all the time. And he criticized the things that this nation was built on. And he criticized the Americans that do hard work and, you know, that make money at doing it. He thought that was not a good thing. Listen, President Trump has brought all that back. And I love it because the country is in the best place we've been in 50 or 60 years.
Right. And I think we'll go on with that conversation in a little bit. But, you know, the bottom line is, and you spoke about it when we first started talking, is that this is all a smokescreen. Every single thing that's happening with regards to this impeachment is a smokescreen. There's no there. And all this is people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Adam Schiff, who are all scared of the new wing of the Democratic Party, these, you know, AOC and the squad, and, you know, Tlaib and Rashid and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez et al., and these new progressive left socialists, and they are so scared that they are going to lose seats to these other Democrats who are Democrat socialists, that this is what this is all about. This is a way to placate their base so that they can stay in power. That's what this is all about, besides the bloodless coup. And they will not vote on this. You want to take a bet that they will not, when push comes to shove, they won't vote on impeachment. Because
Mitch McConnell's not going to let it happen anyway.
Exactly.
But
what's the point?
Here's the other thing. Judicial Watch says that one of the things that they are doing about this whole impeachment thing is because a lot of these people, Ron, were involved in all of the whole Russiagate thing that happened. And Bill Barr is investigating these things right now. And Judicial Watch has numerous lawsuits and subpoenas out on this whole subject. According to Judicial Watch, these people are scared. And that's another reason that they're doing this, because if they can shut Trump down, they figure that the investigation into them goes down. And, you know, it sounds like, I hate conspiracy theorists, and I'm not one. And I know conspiracy theorists, and I don't like it. But if you really take the time to read and to inform yourself about what happens in our government, and not just what the fake news says, and you look at the actual documents and lawsuits and things, and Judicial Watch is a wonderful organization.
Well, that's why we donate to them. And by the way, everybody should donate to Judicial Watch, because it is a phenomenal organization. And Judicial Watch is the organization that goes in there with FOIAs, you know, Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
They file lawsuits to get to the truth, to get the documents, to get the subpoenas, to get what we need as American citizens to provide oversight over our out-of-control government.
And what we find more and more is that the swamp that Donald Trump talked about is a huge and very deep swamp.
And it's real. So let's go get a cup of coffee and come back and continue this lively conversation.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
already start to feel it cool off, and I'm enjoying a coffee mocha tonight, and it's just so great to be with you, you know? And I know you got stuff to talk about, and what is it, the Supreme Court?
Yeah, you know, the Supreme Court just came off of vacation and going back in session, and they have, you know, quite a heavy agenda upcoming. So now, I want to talk about on their first days of the Supreme Court, kind of what they're looking at, and then what else is upcoming in this session.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of people know that the Supreme Court only works a few months out of the year, and then they take a pretty much major break during the summertime, and then they come back for the early fall, late summer, early fall. So they're back in session.
They're back in session. And so the first real thing that, you know, came on their plate, I thought was really an interesting case. And, you know, it's these things in the Supreme Court often affect all of us as a country. So it's good to kind of, you know what's going on with them.
Well, you know, outside of the President of the United States, I really think they're the most powerful people in this country because they create the laws and they rule on the laws.
Right. Well, one of the first things that they had to deal with was this case, which is a horrible case, really. But the crux of the case is whether states can abolish the insanity defense. And that case came from a man by the name of James Craig Collar. And he and his wife were getting a divorce. And he just really was obsessed about the divorce. And over Thanksgiving back in 2009, he murdered his wife, their two daughters, and her mother. He, of course, was arrested, and he wanted to present an insanity defense at his trial. But in Kansas, where this case was, the law prevents him from doing so. They do not have the insanity defense,
well,
per
you know,
se.
That's something that I found interesting. And I deal with the law every single day. And I thought that every single state had the insanity defense. But you're telling me that, what, three states don't have it? Or they tossed it out?
At least three don't have it. The reason that Kansas tossed it out is when John Hinckley tried to murder President Reagan, he used the insanity defense, and he was acquitted of that murder.
And by the way, and I had a discussion about this with our forensic psychologist, Dr. Joni Johnson, and she and I have that program on A Thread of Evidence, and there's only 2% of all the people that plead that try to use the insanity defense, only 2% of those cases actually do they have people that are acquitted. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. Well, under Kansas's new law, mentally ill defendants can argue that their disease precluded them from forming the requisite intent to commit a crime. However, they cannot argue that they can't tell right from wrong due to mental deficit.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So the Supreme Court is looking at this to see if states can actually not have an insanity defense. What was interesting is that Justice Elena Kagan said, "You can't say this, but I can," she said to the attorney. In none of the 46 states that do have an insanity defense, so there's your answer, 46 states, so four don't. I'm guessing that your client would not be found insane. So, you know, this probably wouldn't have affected this guy's case because he thought this whole murder out and he was well prepared for it. But anyway, this case is up and arguments have been heard on this case.
Okay.
Okay, the other case that's already been heard, arguments, has to do with juries and how many people does the decision have to be unanimous? So in many states, most states, decisions have to be unanimous on the jury.
Correct.
And there is an argument before the court as to if they can do an 11-1 or a 10-2 jury
nationwide
decision. Yes.
Right. Now, you know, I was just in that trial in Georgia, and that Georgia was a 12-zip state. It was interesting because I'm down in the deep South, and I was talking with one of the criminal defense attorneys that I was working on, and that was an officer-involved shooting case, as you remember. And she told me, you know, she says, Doc, you know, it's not 12-zip in all the states. And that's interesting because I didn't know that. And she said exactly what you're talking about. Some states are 11-1 and some states are 10-2.
Well, and actually Louisiana was 10-2 and they have moved back to being unanimous now. They did not retroactively go back and change cases, but they are now unanimous. So that only leaves Oregon, who is, you can have a supermajority, 10-2 or 11-1.
And you know what? In the with my work with the United States Navy and Marine Corps through the Judge Advocate General, the triers of fact, you know, which are, of course, all military people, that jury goes 10-2. Okay, so I thought that was pretty interesting to learn.
Yeah, well, I'm curious just about this case, Ron. What do you think? Do you think that they should say that the jury has to be unanimous, or can it be a 10-2 or 11-1?
Well, you know, I think it would have, well, you know, in my case, which was our poor officer was charged, who was, to me, completely innocent, every such way that you can think of, we had one person hang the jury. So we were at 11-1, and we were at 11-1 for about a day and a half. And so I feel that, yeah, I think we should be able to go 11-1 or 10-2.
Well, don't
I don't
forget,
have a problem
this
with
can go the other way, too, because you could have had, let's just say that you're on a case, or anybody's on a case, and the person is guilty. And or innocent, let's just say he's innocent, and you have, you know, a preponderance of people that say guilty. So this is a tough call for the court, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. I really haven't given it enough thought, but I am going to think about how I would feel. But I see so many cases that get hung juries and so many cases that, you know, have to go back and be retried. I wonder.
Well, you know what? This is a great conversation because, you know, obviously I have a lot of thoughts on this because I spend so much time in a courtroom. But I will tell you that it has a lot to do with the jury instructions. Okay, so you know this, and you've been a jury foreman before.
I've been a jury foreman, and which is where I'm basing my opinion from.
Right, okay. So, and me, having never been on a jury, I think for obvious reasons, who's going to pick me to be on their jury? But as you remember, after both sides rest, the judge reads from what I call the good book, and that's the book of jury instructions. And this is when he sits the jury down and has a long discussion with them, and it's a very templated, right out of the book, instruction. He actually reads it word for word and tells them what the standard of proof is. So obviously the standard of proof for a conviction is guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. There can be absolutely no doubt for every single element of the crime or crimes that are alleged.
Right.
And then he talks about things like bias and prejudice and emotions and, you know, voting with your heart instead of with the forensic facts. But I'll tell you, and you probably agree with me because you, like I said, you've been a jury foreman and you've had to deal with this. The way people consider all the evidence and the individuals is it's problematic.
Well, you know what? I totally agree with you. And having been on a jury and having been a jury foreman, the way that people think in that jury room boggles my mind.
It's nuts, isn't it?
And thinking that were I the defendant and getting a jury of my peers, I can't honestly say that that's happening. And I think that most people that have been in a jury room can see that, because people are so diverse and so from different backgrounds, different life experiences, different cultures, different language skills, all kinds of different things, where, you know, sometimes we're dealing with very, very difficult things in a trial, very complex things, and not everybody can necessarily really understand them. And what happens, Ron, is they revert back to their own biases. Instead of having a reasonable opinion about what truly happened and what was right or wrong, and, you know, more objective, they make it very, very subjective and very biased based on their own thoughts and feelings and upbringings and biases. I've seen it firsthand, and honestly, it's very, very frustrating. I don't know of a better system, but I think we need to find one.
Boy, I'll tell you, and thank you so much for bringing that up. And it's so interesting, our different perspectives, right? Because you have a perspective that I've never experienced, and that is actually being in a jury, and especially being a jury foreman, you know, which is a pretty responsible position. I see it as an outsider in the courtroom, but I see it as a forensic investigator and as an expert witness whose job it is to sit up in that jury box and get basically interrogated, you know, by whatever side, you know, the opposing side, whether it's the prosecutor or whether it's the, you know, criminal defense attorney or, you know, a civil case or whatever. But my job is to synthesize all the really complicated technical forensic scientific things and bring it down to basically an eighth grader's level and try to get that argument resonating with them. And especially with the police officers, my job is to try to educate the jury and get them to stand in the shoes of that officer so that they can see and experience everything that the officer experienced up to the ultimate moments, rather than sitting in judgment and criticism from a 20/20 hindsight
and
position.
And that's just so difficult
to
do.
Oh my God, you can't imagine.
So the nice thing about the Supreme Court, to my mind, is that we have, you know, 12 jurists who have this experience, who are highly educated, who can make these decisions and who do make these decisions. So another thing that they're going to be looking at is gay rights in the workplace. So as of right now, less than half the states have laws banning employment discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So they have a legislation called the Equality Act that would impose a single nationwide regime banning discrimination against LGBT workers that has passed the House of Representatives but stalled in the Senate due to concerns about religious liberty, which absolutely is something that you have to think about. So now the Supreme Court's going to hear arguments as to whether existing civil rights laws cover gay and transgender employees. So that's going to be something that the Supreme Court is looking at. And, you know, they just really have a number of things. Another one that is a big one that I'm really interested to see how this plays out. To my mind, I'm very partial on this one. I think that there's only one correct answer to this, and that is, can Trump finally end DACA? And that went to the Supreme Court. So that is something that they're going to be dealing with. And, you know, we're talking about biases in the court, Ron, and the Supreme Court doesn't agree 100% with each other almost ever.
Oh, no,
ever.
Rarely.
Their own biases come in. Another one is gun rights. The gun rights battle is coming in to the Supreme Court. And this is a dispute over New York City's gun transportation regulations that the court's going to hear.
Okay.
So just a little bit of history on that is that New York City's gun transportation forbade licensed gun owners from carrying their firearms beyond city limits, and that they could only be transported to one of seven authorized gun ranges.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. So the plaintiffs say that the city could revert to its original rules at any time and that the Second Circuit's court decision would remain good. But, you know, we're going to see what they say. Another one that's coming up, they've got a huge calendar, the Supreme Court. These are all big cases.
Well, they seem like it.
Yeah, the new conservative majority's first abortion dispute is going to be heard since Brett Kavanaugh's been on the court. So this involves a Louisiana law called, I think it's Act 620, that that this law is requiring that physicians who perform abortions have admitting privileges at local hospitals. And it's kind of similar to the Texas law that the Supreme Court actually struck down about them having to have admitting rights at hospitals.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So
sure.
I don't know how this is going to be, if this is going to, you know, be a foretelling thing or not here. So that's where we're at on the Supreme Court. And I think it's going to be a really interesting, you know, session, and it's going to really affect a lot of people's lives. These are big issues. Of course, that's what gets to the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, and I told you when I was back in Washington and I was attending that suicide certification school, and I was doing some work also at the same time with the United States Department of Justice, I had an opportunity to go tour the United States Supreme Court because I actually have a case there. You know, it's so rare that a law enforcement expert like myself would get a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court and ended up being a very positive case. But I'll tell you what, when I read the case, you know, when I went there, and you, they'll tell you right where the case is and you can go in and read it. It was weird. And the case was called White versus Pauley. And I was defending the New Mexico State Police and an officer involved shooting fatal. I almost didn't recognize my participation in the case because it was weird the way it was all presented by the court. And of course I wrote this huge forensic report on there, and I'm saying to myself, man, I bet you they never even read my report, because it didn't even sound like it was me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great educational experience, and anybody that's in Washington D.C. For a tour, man, don't miss an opportunity to go.
Oh, absolutely.
Go see the United States Supreme Court. And by the way, if it's a sunny day, for God's sakes, bring your sunglasses, because that building is so white, it's blinding.
Well, there's one more case that's going to be really important for the Supreme Court that I hope never makes it to the Supreme Court, and that is the impeachment hearing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Justice Roberts would be presiding over that, because if the House adopts the articles of impeachment against President Trump, Roberts will become the third Chief Justice to sit over a court of impeachment.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that never happens. This is not going to go well if it does.
Well, that's a lot to ponder. How about our last cup of coffee?
Okay.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Well, I know that you're not a South Park fan, right?
I don't even know what South Park is.
Oh my
okay,
gosh.
I know people talk about it. Is it some sort of cartoon?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Okay.
You should know about it. Our daughter watches it, I think, every day of her life.
But I don't live with her. So.
No, that's true. Anyway, they're known for being pretty politically incorrect, and they came out with a show called Banned in China, and banned being spelled B-A-N-D, but it obviously has the connotation of B-A-N-N-E-D, banned.
Okay.
And the show was about how Hollywood kind of tailors its shows to not offend the Chinese so that they can make sure that they sell them, because the Chinese are a big market.
For United States television,
oh,
and
yeah,
movies and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So apparently South Park decided to be politically incorrect, and they wanted to do a critique on the way Hollywood shapes its content to avoid offending Chinese government censors in any way. So now the entire
now you got
show,
me laughing.
now the entire show and every scrap of it has been banned and scrubbed from all internet, all TV, all everything.
So there is no South Park in China.
It does not exist. Every clip, every episode, every online discussion, gone.
Well, they had
I guess
better,
they got banned in China.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have got to watch out in this country, okay? And it's funny that you, you know, funny ha-ha, that you bring it up, but it's also kind of scary because...
Because in New York, look what they're doing.
Well, yeah, but look all over the place. I mean, slowly but surely, if people are offended to something that you say or something that you represent or something that you're going to talk about that they don't like, they become very fascist about it and shut you up. Okay,
so
case in point, just recently, acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McClellan, who's been under a pretty hard time,
he has, you know, yeah.
Since he got appointed as acting, was forced to end his speech before the annual Washington, D.C. immigration policy session, which is sponsored by Georgetown University Law School. So here we get the acting secretary. It's a cabinet position, for God's sakes. Department of Homeland Security, you know, ICE, cybersecurity. I mean, there's so much that Department of Homeland Security is responsible for.
And that's so important to all of us.
But
right?
They don't even know. And so he goes with his entourage from DHS, and he's invited to speak by the law school, by the administration of the law school. And you would think, these are all law school people. These are all people that want to become attorneys to do what? What do you think attorneys want to do? They want to protect civil rights. Wouldn't you agree? And what do you think they do with him? When he starts talking, demonstrators pop up out of the audience with giant signs and are screaming and swearing and not allowing the acting secretary to speak and talk about what's going on at the border. And by the way, there was a Q&A session scheduled for the end of his speech. So they were absolutely going to let other people talk, ask questions, and he was going to be there to respond to their questions. And I watched him start to speak, and it wasn't very long because he kept getting shouted down. And he said, look, I spent my entire career in law enforcement protecting civil rights and the freedom of speech. And right after he said that, one guy stood up and screamed out BS, right? Saying the word. And that was the end of it. You know, and he said, he had warned them, look, I want to give everybody an opportunity to speak, but, you know, you need to let me speak. And even the dean of the law school stood up and said, hey, look, this is all about democracy, and in democracy, we listen to the other side. We may not like what the other side has to say, we might disagree with what the other side has to say, but unless we give them an opportunity to speak, there really is no freedom, there is no First Amendment right, there is no freedom of speech, and we don't have a democracy. What we have, and he didn't say this, but I'll fill in the gaps here, what we have is a fascist society, all right, just like China, where all of a sudden they erase everything having to do with South Park.
Well, just like what they're doing in New York, and they're telling you that you can't talk about immigration or illegal immigrants,
or it's a $250,000 fine. It isn't a little fine. It's not a $25 fine. It's a $250,000 fine. So I just thought that was pretty disgraceful. But you know, I want to talk about something positive, and that is that the United States. We just have the brand new statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and we hired 136,000 new people for jobs this past month, and we dropped our unemployment rate, which is already the lowest we've had, from 3.7 to 3.5% unemployment in the United States of America. That is a 50-year low, and isn't that amazing?
You know, Trump has only been in office for, 3 years?
Oh, no, not even.
Not even. And look at what he's done to turn around employment in this country. Employment was absolutely stagnant. And you and I are both employers of people.
And we didn't hire anybody because, every once in a while we would hire somebody.
Well, you hire somebody if somebody drops off and you need somebody.
Exactly.
But I also had people drop off and I didn't hire people to refill. But It's a completely, being an employer, okay, it's a completely different job market right now. There's, first of all, jobs are hard to fill. I just filled one myself. In fact, this young man's first day was just 3 days ago. And, you know, so we are definitely hiring. And you really, it's interesting to try to get people right now. Here's what I wish, Ron. I wish that a lot of the people would take this opportunity right now, when this job market is this good, to go out and get themselves a little bit more educated.
Exactly. Skilled.
A little bit more skilled.
And verbally skilled.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of get off the video games and get some, you know, learn how to have an interview, learn how to write your name on an application,
resume. Learn how to communicate with people. Now, your job market is totally distinct than my job.
Oh, sure.
You know, because I'm dealing with, you know, professional scientists, you know, forensic people and things like that.
I'm dealing with the everyday American.
You are.
That is out there, you know, having a job. And you have to take care of these people in this job market because the unemployment rate is so low, it's hard to find good people because everybody, there's more jobs than there are people to fill them right now, which is unbelievable to me considering the doldrums this country was in under Obama.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know what's really cool for us is that, and you know, you've got a really large company and you've got, you know, warehouses and everything. You're kind of a big deal, Mrs. Martinelli. Me, I kind of stand in your shadows a little bit. But even for Martinelli and Associates, we hired 8 people during this past year. Okay, now obviously they're all subcontractors, but that's a big deal for us. And that's because business in our industry is absolutely booming. So it was interesting to kind of hear your woes about, you know, trying to, you know, reach out there and find the right, you know, person for a particular job.
Well, what I'll say about my woes are that I went on ZipRecruiter and tried them because I hear all the commercials about them.
Yeah, so what is that like when you use, I don't use that. So what was it like?
Well, I mean, you wouldn't.
No, I mean, with us, it's word of mouth.
But, yeah, I mean, you put out what you want and what you're looking for, and then they're supposed to match people, you know, to you. I mean, the truth is you get, like, a huge amount of so-called resumes, but they're not even resumes. And I would say in the first day I got something like 68 resumes. Many of them didn't have resumes attached. They could barely spell their name.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
amazing. Amazing.
They couldn't type a coherent sentence. Now, it wasn't all of them. There was a handful, maybe 5, that I picked out that I would even, you know, consider talking to just based on what I asked for and what they had to offer. They didn't match at all. So anyway, I did ultimately hire somebody that contacted me that first day. And like I said, it's only been a few days. So, you know, so far so good. But what I did learn after that, just as an aside, was I spoke to ZipRecruiter and told them of kind of my dissatisfaction with that the resumes didn't match what I had asked for at all, and that was supposed to be the whole point.
Yeah, aren't they supposed to be a filtering system?
Yeah, they said that they gave me a guy to work with, so in the future now they're going to do a lot more filtering. But I guess that you have to ask for that. So anyway, that's that. But, you know, again, President Trump did a wonderful thing there. I want to say something else about President Trump. You know, and what I'm going to say is this is something that President Obama never would have done. There was a young girl who, at 11 years old, she was from Ethiopia, and a young black girl from Ethiopia, and she was an impoverished orphan, and she was adopted by a Christian family at age 11.
Okay.
And President Trump just recently, he had some sort of a meeting, I don't remember the name of the place, but it was people of religion that were at the White House, and he was hosting them. And as he was up speaking, this girl, who now is older, she's a young adult now. It was at a Young Black Leadership Summit, and she wanted to pray over the president. And what do you think that President Trump did?
I have no idea.
Well, he stopped right away, invited her up, and accepted her prayers.
Well, that's wonderful.
And I just think that it's just really touching, because that just never would have happened in the other way. And I'm saying, honestly, I'm saying if that person that asked to pray over President Obama was white, I don't think he would have done it. I just don't. But President Trump was so gracious, and this young lady encouraged people to pray for the nation. She prayed for the president. Just a beautiful scene.
Well, I think that's touching, and that's amazing. And, you know, this president of the United States, he's different. Let's just say that. He's different than any other.
He is different, very different.
Right, very different than any other president we've ever had. Because I think for so many years, and maybe going back maybe 80 years, Linda, when was the last time we had a populist president? Can you think of one who was a populist?
No. Okay, maybe a little bit of Reagan.
Yeah. Well, okay. But, you know, that's kind of a hard thing to find as far as a president of the United States.
And they just don't know what to do with him, Ron.
I know. I think that's where Lynn, I think that's where a great deal of the hate comes from, right? They just don't know what to do with him. And little by little, he's working hard to drain the swamp. And I think that's super important. And I think that's what everybody wants in this country.
Well, and speaking of the swamp, Ilhan Omar has filed for divorce from her husband of 1 year because she's been having an affair with the other guy.
So you're saying that the divorce comes somewhat as a surprise? What's it called when you bring up a line? I have a line from one of my favorite movies.
Okay.
Casablanca. All right, and it's the inspector that comes into the gambling facility, right? That everybody knows is where all the gambling takes place, right? What is his name? Lieutenant Richard or something like that. And he goes, "Gambling here, gambling. I'm shocked, I say."
And that's how you feel about this. Well, I actually was pretty surprised that, and we talked about it, I was pretty surprised that she was having an affair. But now she's separated from her husband, who she filed taxes with long before he was her husband, and she was married to somebody else, so she filed joint taxes with this guy. Question is, how is she a congressperson of this country? How is this person making laws and telling me what to do when she has broken so many herself?
Listen, I don't want to be disparaging, and I want to make sure, full disclosure, I'm saying right up front, I don't know the truth of it, but is this not the gal that was alleged to have married her own brother to get him into the country? Is it the same gal?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's just a rumor. Okay, but...
Well, I don't think it's a rumor.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's a little strange, wouldn't you say?
Well,
but you know what gets me? Okay, so now you got me off on something here. Okay. So I want to talk... And we've only got a couple more minutes, but let's talk about these untouchable people, okay? The ruling elite or the untouchable, powerful people in the United States, and how there's no justice for us, but these guys and gals get away with almost murder, okay? Ooh. I mean, let's talk about that. You know, so, okay, listen, and you know that I am no fan of that guy that they call The Situation.
Right.
Okay. And I don't remember his name, but he's on that dumb show you watch from time to time.
I don't watch the show.
Oh, yes, you do.
No, I've never watched the show.
The marriage boot camp show or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
no, it's called.
Yeah, but okay. That's not his show.
Oh, that's not his show. Okay, but anyway. So the Situation guy, and that was from Jersey Shores, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so apparently he got into trouble with the IRS, and I don't know what he owed. I'm going to have to Google it and find out. But he just came out of prison for doing 5 months. Okay, did 5 months in federal prison for tax evasion. Al Sharpton owes millions in back taxes to the United States government. Why is that guy not in prison and doing? Why isn't he the Situation's roommate? That's what I want to know.
Okay, well, and my issue is somebody like Ilhan Omar, who marries her brother to get him into the country, which is illegal, and then she has an affair with this other guy, but that's not illegal, so you can get away with that. But she's got so many different dishonest things that she has done since she's been in office.
Well, the whole
thing. How is it that she's making laws for me and for you?
Exactly.
How
right.
is it that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is making laws for me and you and turning out to be the darling of the Democrats when there is a whole lot of misappropriation of funds, of her campaign funds,
exactly.
that haven't been accounted for?
Exactly.
How does this happen?
Well, no, I don't know how it's happened, but I will tell you what, that is certainly a subject, a topic of discussion for a future Talking While Married coffee conversation, because you know, when it comes to justice, it's like just us. Okay? You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah,
it's like
true.
Them and just us.
Yeah, and I think that's what Trump is trying to clean up, and I think it's harder than he ever anticipated.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he ever realized for a moment how deep he was getting into this thing.
Yeah.
Well, listen, are you ready for bed tonight?
I absolutely am.
Well,
got to work tomorrow.
Let's, me too. So let's call it a night and hit the sack.
Okay.